Here at Delmarva Public Radio, we have an abundance of great programming produced by a group of fascinating folks. Today, via phone, let's meet Kim Clark, host of Dig, heard on WSDL 90.7 FM every Saturday afternoon at 3. Okay, Kim Clark, tell me, what is Dig all about?
Dig is about digging into the music of the 1960s, past the big hits, past the usual sex that we've heard over and over and over. There was so much great music released during that decade that I just felt like it was a darn shame that it was the same couple or 300 that we hear over and over when I knew there was so much more, and I just wanted to share it.
Why do you think it is that so much of it doesn't get played? Is it just the limitations of pop music radio, or did people not hear it the first time? What do you think?
Well, as I like to say, there was so much good music at that time. And roughly, I'm talking from 64 to 69. And you could really almost drill down and say from late 66 to early 68. I mean, that's where really the good stuff was. But there was so much that there wasn't room for it on the airwaves. There wasn't room for it in stores. And there was just too much to absorb. I mean, a lot of it, you know, there were great regional hits that only people in certain parts of the country heard. And some stuff that was, you know, really good songs and albums that got up to, you know, like 50 or 40 on the chart and, you know, did pretty well, sold 10,000, 20,000 copies, and it just lost in the midst of time because there was so much great stuff. There was a, you know, incredible amount of good stuff and then so much great stuff that we hear the great stuff, the Beatles, the Stones, and those things over and over and over, and we should, but there's so much more.
Well, tell me about the history of the program. How did you come up with this idea? You know, how long have you been doing it? That kind of stuff.
Well, I've kind of been doing it my entire life. I started buying records in 1964 when I was 5 years old. That was what I used my allowance money for when I was five. And I've been building my collection ever since. And I played radio and, you know, always imagined myself being a DJ. But my first radio show based on my own collection was probably about 2009 or so, and I did a show for an AM station in Hendersonville, North Carolina, called The Record Shack. That was my show, and I wasn't limited to just the 60s. I played some of my 78s. I played classic country. I went up into the 70s and the 80s. It was just everything out of my collection, again, with the idea of playing things that people probably hadn't heard before. Maybe it was an artist that they were very familiar with, but aside or track from that artist they haven't heard before. So I did that for several years until we moved out of the Hendersonville area, and then I just kind of sat around for a while and thought, I want to do that again, except this time I want to play what I really, really, really love, which is the music from the 1960s.
Your endless supply of records, where have you gotten them from? Is it all just your collection from back from when you started first getting them?
Well, that's where it all came from, and I still have the stuff that I bought when I was a kid. But probably beginning in the mid-80s, I became an avid digger. At flea markets, thrift stores, yard sales, I would go out every Saturday and Sunday and just come home with hundreds of records. And, you know, I started out just buying things by artists that I knew. That's what I was looking for, because this predated CDs, and all this stuff was out of print. So if I wanted to hear it, this was the only way to find it. But, you know, after I started doing that, I accumulated so much. But then those sources started to dry up, you know, as the Internet came into its own and all the stuff kind of migrated over to eBay. And so, you know, I accumulated tens of thousands of records that way. And now I'm continuing to accumulate music, but most of it digitally, you know, either by buying it online or trading with people all over the world.
What is the most valuable record in your collection?
Oh, boy, that's a hard question. I'm sitting here right now in front of my rack of albums.
Do you have the Beatles record with the Butcher cover or, you know, anything?
No, I've never run across one of those. Probably, you know, so I have some early Elvis picture sleeves. I have the Elvis 78. I have, like, the Crystals, He Hit Me and It Felt Like a Kiss. A DJ copy of that in mint condition. That was withdrawn, you know, because the unfortunate subject matter. They just didn't understand when they put it out that it wasn't going to float very well. But I have to tell you, the internet and all the records that are now on eBay and the other Discogs and the other places on the internet have driven prices down, because if there are only 200 copies of something in the world, probably 100 of them are going to be online.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be, you know, you might go your entire collecting life and never run across one.
What's the most valuable record from a sentimental point of view for you?
You know what? It's probably the Beatles' second album, which was it wasn't released that way in the UK. That was an American release. And it was $2.98 at Woolworth. I still have the sticker on it. But it was my first Beatle album, and I got it in the Christmas of 65 with my first record player of my own. And I just remember how it looked sitting under the Christmas tree, and that was Nirvana. And I still have it out here in front where I can see it every day.
Why do you think the music from the 60s has such an enduring appeal? And here's what I was thinking of. Every time I listen to your show, there's always some song that I swear, that can't be from the 1960s because that sounds contemporary to me. You know, there's always uh-huh. something that I'm hearing that I'm thinking, I just heard a band that sounds exactly like that. You know, in general, why do you think it's so enduring?
Well, to answer the first part of that, I think a lot of the bands now are going back to the 60s and picking up those influences, and we're definitely hearing them. The other thing is, I think the music is so enduring, and really, you can't really talk about the early 60s, pre-Beatles. That was a whole different thing. A lot of that was kind of fluffy, you know, pop little ditties, and I mean, they certainly have their place, but they don't reach that same level that things did after the Beatles. I just think there was an exuberance about that music, a freshness about it, and I'm going to get a little esoteric here and say that particularly when you got to 66 and 67, there was a higher vibration to that music. I mean, think about how you feel when you hear it. You feel good. You feel elevated. And that is something that is timeless. That's why it still affects people that way. Not just people who were here then, not just us baby boomers who remember it, but people who are hearing it for the first time. It has a very similar effect. I think that effect was lost a lot in the very late 60s around Woodstock and after that, because a lot of hard drugs came into the scene and it kind of lowered that vibrational level. But I think it's a higher vibrational type of music for the most part. And we respond to that.
Well, when you're putting the show together, I've noticed that you have a lot of, it's not just the British invasion and it's not just jangle 12-string guitar, jangle music. How
right.
do you work the mix of your show? Do you say, like, I'm going to try to have a certain percentage of Motown songs in there? Or is there a formula you use or you just throw it together?
Well, the way I put it together is it's kind of a constant process because, you know, I'm thinking about the music all the time and I'm hearing it as I play it myself. And as things catch my ear that I think, oh, man, I want to play that on the show. I haven't played that yet. I'll just kind of make a note or go to the computer and pull it over into a playlist in my iTunes. And then after I get a pretty good hopper full of music, I'll sit down and start to sort through it. And I do keep an eye toward balance, you know, with I want to keep some soul in the mix and make sure there's some folk rock in there and some of the softer stuff and throw in a little bit of the harder edge. So you do get a pretty full view or listen of what the music was like back then.
How do you put the show together?
I collect music all through the week in my head or on a piece of paper or in my computer that I think I want to play. And then generally on Sunday evening, I'll sit down and start to go through it. And it could be that a song will remind me of something else, and I go looking for that. And I'll play around with it. And once I get it down to about 20 or so songs, usually I go through 20 or 21 songs every show because of the short length of them. Once I get it down to about that number and I feel like I have a good balance of styles and years and that kind of thing, then I'll start sequencing it, you know, try to make sure it flows. And if I can put together a little thematic set in there, I'll do that. And then it's all about timing, you know, it has to come out exactly to 59 minutes. So I'll make sure that it does that. And then I sit down and start putting it together.
If folks are listening to the show and they hear a bit of information that you have or, you know, they want to share something with you, what's the best way to reach you?
The best way would be at, you can just go to gigradio.org and you can contact me, you know, through there. You'll see a link to my email. And I really, really love it when people do that. I know a lot of people just kind of want to sit back and hear what I'm going to toss out there, but any response, any comments, any requests, I would love it. Or just have a dialogue between music lovers. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, when you're not listening to your own show, what kind of music do you listen to?
Well, I spend a lot of time listening to 60s music because I'm constantly putting together the show. But when I am not listening to 60s music, the new stuff I like definitely has a 60s vibe to it, like the Decemberists, the Temples, that kind of thing. I love Nico Case. I find myself unable to locate as much new music as I would like to because it's just kind of hard to find a very well-curated source. But other than that, I love the 1980s. I think that was probably the last era of the really cool single. It was a very much a singles era. And so there were some great singles by bands you didn't ever hear from again, but who cares? Because those songs were really good, and they really are of that time. And they take me back to that time. Also, I have a really big collection of 78 RPMs, pre-war, all the way up through the 50s. I have some rock and roll on 78. And I love to bring those out and play them on an old school record player because the scratches and just the real compressed sound, it is like getting in a time machine and going back to that time. So I love to do that.
The 45s that you play, the other albums that you play, do you do any archiving? Do you do any sort of trying to tidy up the sound of them, or do you just let them go as they are?
For the most part, I let them go as they are because the more you try to clean them up, you start to lose a little bit of what it is that makes them special. I mean, you can take the noise out of a record, but when you do that, you take some of the sound too, and you end up with a digital, you know, kind of a distortion in the background. So unless if it's really bad, I just skip it. I mean, there's some great records I'd love to play, but they just don't quite pass muster, and I'm not going to digitally massacre them, to try to get them on the air. So I would say mostly they just go as they are.
I like the sound of scratches on records. It's kind of a comforting sound.
I do too, unless they're really annoying.
What's in the future for Dig? What are your plans?
Well, I'm going to keep on keeping on because I've got a whole lot of music that we haven't heard yet, and I keep collecting music. And I want to keep sharing it with other stations. You know, there are a few other stations in the country that carry it, and really, you know, through no effort of mine, I've been too busy collecting the music and working with that to really try to promote it. But I want to see if I can get some more stations to carry it and just spread the music and, you know, just kind of create a network of people who are really digging the music. And it's not just baby boomers. I probably hear more from younger people who are just tapping into the music and responding to it.
Give me an example of a younger listener.
Okay. I have a listener in Asheville, North Carolina, the very first person who contacted me when the show first went on the air. And she was telling me how much she enjoyed it and how she knew she liked 60s music. She knew about the Beatles. She knew about the Kinks, she knew about the Stones. That was about it. And she was really loving that she was hearing other things. Heard from her again about maybe a month ago. She has not missed a show, and she has taken notes on every show and has really, you know, pursued these songs and has been able to accumulate a pretty big collection of 60s music based on what I've played. And to me, that is a huge compliment.
All right, we've been talking to Kim Clark. Thank you very much, Kim. And you can check out her show at...
It is digradio.org.
You can hear Dig every Saturday afternoon at 3 on WSDL 90.7 FM Rhythm and News and digradio.org. I'm Chris Rank for Delmarva Public Radio.